Hello, podcasters. Welcome to another great podcast today. Today, I'm excited for you to hear this podcast.
Yeah, and also you're excited about going to Utah this weekend because you're going to be at a couple of showings of the movie Unplanned.
Yes.
Which is coming out on Friday. Mm-hmm. You can go to glenbeck.com and get the details of where you're going to be because you're going to be appearing and talking about the movie. So if you, this is a movie about life and how important it is, and it's an important
this
movie.
This is probably the most important movie on abortion ever. It will change your family, and that's why MPAA gave it a rating of R, and that's why I'm going to Salt Lake, because that population generally doesn't see rated R movies, and it is critical that you take your teenagers to this. They will never look at abortion the same ever again. It's a really good movie. You will enjoy it. It's full of heart, has a happy ending. You're not going to walk out depressed, but you will walk out convicted. And please go to glenbeck.com and look where I'm going to be on Friday. If that theater is sold out, then they'll just add another one, and I'm going to meet as many people as I can and talk to you as the audience. So please, that's this Friday. I'm going to Salt Lake City. Join me there. All right, today's show is great. First, we had to talk down to the media just a little bit to tell them the difference between opinion and fact. And we spoke very slowly for the slow learners, you know, that are in the front of the class. Maybe they have eye problems or something, but they can't keep up with the rest of the class, like Brian Stelter from CNN. So we have that. Also, we talked to the Blaze White House reporter, the guy who was in the press pool there. He had just left the White House. Ben Sasse on Nebraska floods, which led Stu right, of course, to the latest on global warming. Mm.
Devastated.
Russian soldiers are in Venezuela, and Peter Schweizer, an amazing story of corruption on Joe Biden that you have to hear all on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Let me tell you about our spotlight. Last year, the Manhattan District Attorney's Office released the grand jury report noting that law enforcement had received 2,000 complaints of deed fraud, and almost every case involved a faulty notarization. You get a fake notary, which you can buy online for like $20, and you go down to the courthouse, you forge signature on a title transfer, which you can get just at the courthouse, and you fake the notary. You own somebody's house, and you can do anything with it. 2,000 in Manhattan. This is really a problem, and don't let it happen to you or your parents, please. Go to HomeTitleLock.com and make sure that your title still is your title and remains that way. Get your $100 search for free when you sign up, and then let the professionals, the only ones in the business that can do this, Home Title Lock. Let them take care of it and take care of your family. HomeTitleLock.com. That's HomeTitleLock.com. Let's remind ourselves where this all really began. This whole collusion thing began where? With Hillary Clinton losing the election. All right? She was the biggest pile of dog crap candidate we've ever seen in America. There's never been a worse candidate. And I'm pretty good with history. I can't think of a worse candidate from one of the two parties. Can you? Have we ever run a Klan member? Well, Woodrow Wilson. Woodrow Wilson. He wasn't a Klan member officially, but he was pretty close. Hillary Clinton was awful. Absolutely awful. And Donald Trump beat her. Now, that's something that nobody wants. I mean, if you put yourself in Hillary Clinton's shoes and you're just awful, not because of corruption and crimes and everything else that you've done, but because you're just not qualified to be the president, okay? And you're beaten by Donald Trump. That's not something that you take and go, okay, well, I didn't have any experience and he didn't have any experience and his tie is too long. And I mean, how did I lose that guy? You have to justify it somehow, I guess. And so that's what Hillary Clinton had to do. She had to come up with something. And here is where it all started. Hillary Clinton, cut one, please.
The Russians, in my opinion, and based on the intel and counter intel people I've talked to, could not have known how best to weaponize that information unless they had been guided. And here's
guided by Americans.
Guided by Americans and guided by people who had, you know, polling and data information.
Is that? But you're leaning Trump.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. I think just say it. So her case was that Donald Trump, they wouldn't have known who to hack, what to hack, how to use this without Donald Trump. Now, I know Donald Trump knows how to use Twitter, but I'm guessing that's as far as it goes. I can't imagine Donald Trump even trying to use Snapchat. I don't think he knows how to use that. Okay. Instagram may throw him for a loop. But to think that Donald Trump was the guy that had access to all this polling and data and knew exactly he was guiding. This is not collusion. She's saying he guided the Russians on how to do this. All right, here's what you do. Don't forget the colon. The colon is very important. Teaching them what? How to write the code? How to be able to hack in? How to be able to read polls? How to use what you've just done? This is a whole different level.
Right. If you're going to commit a crime by trying to guide the Russians to hack the Democratic National Committee, why not just hack the Democratic National
right.
Committee? And you're already there.
Right. You're guiding them?
Yeah.
This is incredible. Okay. So that's where we started. And immediately, everybody jumps on the bandwagon. Why? Because they cannot accept that Donald Trump won. Period. That's a fact in their head. Donald Trump cannot be the president legitimately because I don't know anyone who voted for him.
That goes for every Republican. I mean, George Bush couldn't have eaten Al Gore. John Kerry even had a conspiracy theory about how that was illegitimate. I can't remember the last time a Republican was supposedly legitimately elected.
So I'm going to slow the show down here a little bit, okay, because right now, members of the media must be going, I don't know. He said it was the Glenn Beck program. Am I listening to a program? Is he on stage? They're lost. So I'm going to slow it down just a little bit and try to explain the difference between opinion and news. News is not about opinion. News is not about moving the American people one way or another. News is what happened today. Now, it can also be about what is happening, but news is never about what may happen. That's not news. That's speculation. Now, there's a difference between speculation and opinion. Opinion is based on facts. Speculation can be anything. Speculation could be, you know who was on that grassy knoll? Yeah, it was Rafael Cruz. We know that. But Donald Trump was the one that got Rafael Cruz drunk. That's why he never hit the president. He never hit him. We got to go down there, and I'll bet you right now, I speculate right now that there's a bullet that we can carve out of one of those trees in the grassy knoll. That's wild speculation. Opinion is formed with its basis in fact. It's a theory. And theories are unproven. Facts are not. Facts are facts. Remember, everybody was saying at the beginning of the Trump, he just doesn't understand facts. Oh, he's got a different set of facts. You want a different set of facts? Media, heal thy own self first. Because you've been operating for 2 years on a completely different set of facts. We just heard those facts from Hillary Clinton. And you gobbled it up because your opinion drives facts. Opinion is supposed to be driven by facts. Facts first, then opinion. You have an opinion. He can't be the president. And so then you go out and you look for little pieces of facts that will, yes, if I put it that way and I put this word over here and that word over here and then this sentence from that person underneath, ha ha ha, I've got it. He's actually Dr. Frankenstein. He's an evil scientist, and he has taken over the world. Bring out the monster! That's not the way it works. Now, when you're in opinion media, and I know this because I have always said, in fact, I remember when I was at CNN arguing with the publisher of the San Francisco Chronicle, who called me a journalist, and I had him on the show, and I said, I'm not a journalist. I am an opinion guy. He said, well, there's no difference. You are a journalist. No, I'm not. Here's the difference. I have opinions on what has happened. I also then have opinions based on fact on what could happen. Now, that's really going out. That's really going out. But my opinions are not based on what I want. In fact, many times the opinions are things I do not want to happen. Things that I warn people about. And I always say, I hope I'm wrong about this. And here's the thing. When you're doing opinion, you have to be willing to be wrong. It requires you to understand that your opinion is not a fact. No matter how hard you work, your opinion will never be a fact. No matter how many times it's been laundered through this news service or that news service, it still remains your opinion. And you must always remain willing to be wrong. In fact, you should be hopeful that you're wrong. I cannot believe that I live in an America that just had the FBI say your president is not a foreign agent. And half the country went, oh, crap. No, he's got to be a foreign agent. You want him to be a foreign agent? Put this into perspective, please. Tell me one thing that could have been worse than a president being a foreign agent for Vladimir Putin. Can you think of anything? Oh, crap. Are you sure? Go back and look again. There's got to be. You know what? I don't even believe any of those facts. Yes, they have 40 FBI agents. 40 FBI agents. They spent 2 years, millions of dollars. But come on, he's got to be a spy, right? He's got to be a foreign agent. Come on, we all know he wants to destroy America. Even if it's not true, let's just say he's destroying America because our opinion has now become fact. I'm going to speak even a little slower for the people like Brian Stelter at CNN who really don't understand this. And I don't want to single him out because I think he's a dumpy little bald guy who is an absolute moron. I don't want to get personal like that. I want to base it on facts. Cut six, please, Brian Stelter.
There is a big difference. There is a big difference between news and opinion. And I realize it can be hard to tune out all the noise and just tune into the news these days.
Talk down to me.
But if I had to pick speculation or solid reporting, I would pick solid reporting in a second. Oh, I bet okay. You would too. It is the best feeling in journalism. It's the greatest value add. That's what hundreds of journalists have been doing, trying to solve pieces of this Trump-Russia puzzle. But here's the thing, speculation actually has value too.
Ooh.
It helps open our eyes, helps open our minds to what's possible.
Oh, it helps open our minds and our eyes. Really, Brian? Do you really think the journalists around you have an open mind to Donald Trump? Because you're proving that all to be bullcrap right now with the responses on the news channels. So I'll try to use, how do I even explain this? I was going to say single syllable words, but syllable has two syllables in it. So
you're going to be shocked to hear it has three.
Shut up.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and if you like what you hear on the program, you should check out Pat Gray Unleashed. His podcast is available wherever you download your favorite podcast.
I would definitely recommend if Michael Bublé is in town, you go and see that instead of going to see the movie Us. That
really?
I would definitely suggest, because Us sucks.
Really?
Yes, it's awful. It's getting all these great reviews.
All I'm hearing about is it's the next Alfred Hitchcock. The next Alfred Hitchcock.
It sucks. I mean, Jordan
Peele.
Wait.
Did you see, what was the movie before it?
Get Out?
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved Get Out. I thought it was really good.
I didn't see that movie, but I hear great things about it. You liked it.
You would like, yeah. The audience, there's parts that the audience would really appreciate, too, because it was all about kind of
I know.
Obama liberals.
Yes,
Who said they're just not racist at all, but in the end, there was a hint of it might have detected.
This one.
This one is I just, and again, I liked his last movie. I just feel like Jordan Peele is in that moment where he can do no wrong to critics, so they have to say anything he does, anything he touches is good.
So what's the Rotten Tomatoes?
It's like 94% or something. That's why
with
I went
the
to
audience?
See it. No, the critics. Critics are 90.
Who looks at the critics?
I look at the critics because the critics will at least get you to that low hurdle of competence, usually. Like, at least the movie's done
the
relatively
critics are,
well.
The critics are the also. You look at the movie score. You look at the audience score.
The audience. You look
and
at
then, and then if it's low, you may look at the critics because you're like, oh, well, I don't know. Is it a kind of an artsy thing or something like that?
Right.
Or, and so if that's high, you know, okay, there's a problem here. Or if the audience is high and the critics are low, you immediately go, okay, wait a minute. Is this a film that would appeal to normal human beings?
Right, because your blockbusters, your kind of standard horror movies, always have a higher audience score than the critics.
What's the audience score of this one, Marissa? 71?
So that's telling you that's telling you Art House City, isn't it?
Yeah, that's when telling you something. No, it's probably telling you more about the times we live in.
Right, because that's almost like a statement. There's like some racial statement in the movie or whatever. I mean, honestly, the acting was just agonizing and, oh, God, it was just not good. It was not a good movie. But there's some statement, and Jordan Peele is, you can't say anything bad about him right now.
He's black. He's got to win.
He's an important black director. He's breaking down barriers. And how they rate these movies. What is the intersectionality of the people involved? Like Black Panther, I saw a clip of Black Panther, and I hate these kind of movies, superhero movies, generally speaking. But I saw about 15 minutes of Black Panther. That it was terrible.
No, it wasn't.
Absolutely. No,
you don't have a good opinion on any Marvel things. You're out of step, and you might be in step with a lot of people who hate those kind of movies.
No, but some of them. Like I liked Iron Man. I liked the first Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah,
I will say I allowed the idea that I may have just seen the worst 15 minutes of the movie. But it was just like them. You know, the typical chase action scenes, which were just, I've seen them 100,000 times now.
Yes,
the same
scenes. Yes, yes.
And then in intertwined with really bad, cheesy, wise-ass lines.
I thought it was a fun movie. I just go into Marvel movies for fun.
It doesn't matter. But the point is, it doesn't matter if Black Panther was a good movie or not.
I agree
you
with you.
You must love it.
I agree.
You must. Whether you love it or not, you must love it. And that's what this is with Us.
By the way, if you are going to a movie this weekend, please see this movie. See Unplanned. Mm. It is so important. This is the film that could change everything. Bring your kids. Now, it's been rated R by the MPAA, but it is not a rated R movie. It's not. It has no swearing. It has nothing
no
in
sex,
it.
No sex. No swearing.
Nothing. This is a political reason to stop this movie from being seen. I'm going to where nobody likes to even go see PG-13 movies, and that's in Salt Lake City this weekend. I'm going to be at Thanksgiving Point, one of them at 6:30, and then the other one is in Sandy, I think. Go to Megaplex. Just go to glenbeck.com and find out, but I will see you there for Unplanned Friday.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program. Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
Michael Avenatti. Now, Michael Avenatti is the kind of guy that you're... The first time you saw Michael Avenatti, did you not go, okay, that guy's shady?
You know exactly who he was.
You knew exactly. You would not have even bought a car from this man. But what did the news media do?
Huge credibility they assigned to him.
Michael Avenatti, and a respected attorney from Los Angeles.
He's visiting Iowa. He might be running. I do believe that actually happened not that long ago.
I know. He was arrested yesterday on charges of bank fraud, embezzlement, and extortion. Now, before I bring John Miller in, he is the host of the White House Brief and our White House correspondent for Blaze TV. Here's the CNN spin. Trump created the environment in which someone like Avenatti could be taken seriously. Avenatti's fall proves there is only one Donald Trump out there. That's incredible.
Incredible.
That's incredible.
That is contortion.
Oh my gosh. Guys at CNN, you're responsible for Michael Avenatti. You put him on as a credible guest. Why? Because he confirmed your bias. He was saying the things you needed someone to say. So you didn't care who said it.
And you brought him on every single night. I mean, it was had to be, what, 3 months of... Almost every night on cable news.
Crazy. So we have John Miller on, and I have John on just because I can't wait. When are you going to the White House? When are you going to be in the pool again? When?
So I'm actually just leaving. I was there this morning just kind of gathering sources and talking to people. It's depressing, and that's really all I can say. They don't want to admit that they're depressed. So they're kind of playing this game where they're saying, oh, there's other stories out there. Trump's DOJ is trying to take down Obamacare.
Wait. There are other stories out there. We can get him another way. No, wait a minute. The story is you've been wrong for 2 years.
You've been wrong and you've been lying to everyone for 2 years. I mean, CNN, you talk about CNN. They've been, I think they spent over 2,000 hours talking about the whole non-story that turned out to be a complete hoax. But yesterday, Glenn, I went on your TV program and said, I think they're so upset because they are, they are liberal activists. And for them, mm-hmm. this has been completely destroying their narrative. I stand by that. I think there is another element, however, and having talked to some quote-unquote journalists, I think that it's important to say this. This was their story for 2 years, and they showed up to the White House every single day thinking that this was going to be their Woodward and Bernstein moment, and mm-hmm. that this was going to be the name they made for themselves, and they were going to take down this president, and that's how they were going to make their mark on the world. We are the journalists who took down the Trump presidency. I mean, the fact that that didn't happen and this is basically over is devastating for them. And you want to hear what, you know, the liberal journalists are saying. You just have to listen to the Democrat politicians because they sound exactly the same. And they're in denial. They don't trust William Barr's report. Has the White House seen the report? Is William Barr's judgment on this, should we accept that? Does this have something to do with Trump's DOJ? Eric Swalwell's out there saying there's still evidence of collusion. So that's sort of the line they're towing. But when they can't get that, then they're going back to, well, there's other things we can talk about. How do we cover this up?
Unbelievable. Hang on. I'm looking for the cut sheet. Here it is. Tom Perez, Listen to Tom Perez. Now, he's with the Democratic Party. Listen to what he said yesterday.
So. We know, in addition to the fact that the Russians tried to meddle in our investigation, we know that his campaign manager, his deputy campaign manager, his lawyer, Papadopoulos, Stone, all of these people were having contact. And so the question for me that remains is, was he compromised? Why did he say that he believes Putin over the intelligence community? Why did he talk about leaving NATO, things that put our national security at jeopardy? Why doesn't he release his tax returns? Why
okay, were they stop, so stop, hell-bent stop. I on... love this. I love this. And his tax returns.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a word salad. Those tax returns, his taxes, he's corrupt, Russian puppet.
Yeah, and how about his hair? What's the deal with his hair? I mean, it's crazy what they're doing. Listen to what he said. He had all these contacts, and we have to know, was he compromised? No, that was what the investigation was. Well, why would he believe Putin over the intelligence agencies? Because if John Brennan is any reflection of our intelligence agencies, it turns out that he was right not to believe them.
I mean, you got Joe Scarborough saying, oh, John Brennan, were you just like us and you were given, you know, maybe not so good information? And John Brennan was like, well, yes, it turns out the information we were given wasn't as good as we thought it was. You were the former director of the CIA, dude. I mean, you cannot just get away with I guess it was wrong.
So hang on just a second, John. Follow this line, because you're a very logical guy. You went to Columbia University. So you're a very logical guy. Help me out on this problem. Two things. First, on the intelligence committee or community, John Brennan said that he was committed treason and that he had it on good authority that this was going to come and he was going to go to jail because he's a traitor. Okay. Then yesterday he comes out and says, I had bad information. At the same time he's saying that, the media is hammering Donald Trump because he said we should have an investigation on our intelligence community. Well, if you're the former director of the CIA, and they're telling you, yeah, he was definitely, and they turn out to be wrong, wouldn't you be calling for an investigation? Shouldn't John Brennan be joining Donald Trump on that?
You would think so, but I think at this point they're such partisan hacks that they just don't, they're not even thinking logically, they're just sputtering out of control. I mean, the whole thing. And they should investigate where this thing started, because the whole thing was based on a dossier that has been discredited from day one. And John Brennan actually used that dossier to launch an espionage campaign against all of Trump's people. So whether or not you can trust the guy, I think that's out the window. And the entire intelligence community has been, and including the guys at the Comey McCabe FBI, they've been essentially conspiring to get Trump, for lack of a better term. So I think it is fair to say maybe these guys aren't the honest brokers you thought they were. Maybe these guys should be investigated.
All right, let me ask you one more question. And this I'd like you to ask your friends in the press pool there at the White House. When they start saying, I know they're not. When they start saying Congress wants to look into all of this, Congress is calling for their own investigation, and they want access to this because they claimed today and yesterday, they're claiming that they don't have to do the kinds of investigation that the FBI does. They have special powers, and they can do special things that the FBI cannot do. I would like you to ask them, if you believe that, then how come you didn't say, wait a minute, during the Kavanaugh hearings when they demanded there had to be an FBI investigation because only the FBI could look into things? Congress didn't have the power to do investigations like that.
Are you saying that there is some hypocrisy?
I'm not saying not hypocrisy. Just there's no logic here. There's no logic and no honesty. No honesty.
I will ask them that for you.
Yes, please do. Please do. And John, my phone line is open to you at any time. Okay. I just want to hear I want to hear all of the sad tales from the White House press room as you see them squirm and sob. What'd you say?
I think you just see the different stages of grief. So as they walk through them, I'll try to walk
There might be 17 stages of grief for them. I don't know, but I want to enjoy every single stage. Thanks, John. Appreciate it. That's John Miller from The Blaze TV. He's the host of White House Brief. Really, really, really sharp guy. You can watch him every day on Blaze TV.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury 1 is already on the ground there. We were waiting for the floodwaters to recede. We have trucks that have been trucking things in and feeding people now in Nebraska. You can help with that at mercury1.org. And Ben Sass from the great state of Nebraska is joining us now. Ben, how are you?
I'm doing well, Glenn. Thank you for that shout out to the work you're doing and to the work a lot of other charitable organizations are doing. Really some amazing stuff of neighbors across the country reaching out to our people. So thank you.
I think it was your governor that I heard yesterday saying, you know, Nebraska, they know how to take care of each other. And, you know, while we find it disappointing that the press isn't talking about this, you know, that's fine. We know how to take care of each other. And it must be frustrating for people in Nebraska that, I mean, you were treated worse than Puerto Rico. Nobody's even, it's like Nebraska's not even a state.
We need to put it in context how big this flood is, because since the media hasn't been covering it nationally, I think lots of folks just don't have any understanding of the magnitude of this. But I don't want to focus exclusively on the negative.
No, I don't either. I don't either.
Or the media's horrible job of covering this.
Right.
But the sort of stuff of neighbors, I want to make sure we get back to that, because I have tears in my eyes every day in some shelter in Nebraska where you meet yet another family who had their house washed away. And when they got delivered to the shelter, they insisted on getting into the volunteer line. People show up at our shelters again and again and again, having had their homes washed away. And if their bodies are intact, they get in the volunteer line when they get to the shelter. So some really amazing stuff. But just to put the flood in context for people, by far the worst natural disaster Nebraska has ever experienced. We had a pretty big flood in 2011, 8 years ago, that was sort of thought of as the 100-year flood. This is an order of magnitude bigger than that. We have 93 counties, and 79 of them are currently in states of emergency.
Oh, my gosh.
The town that I'm from, a 25,000 person ag town, is on the flattest plains you can imagine. And my town became an island for 3.5 days. And they had to start, we had to start airlifting in water and food and other supplies because there was no way in or out of the town. Well, when you're in a 26,000 person town, we have an airport. So it was pretty easy to airlift supplies in once you realize this problem existed. We have a lot of communities of 300 or 500 people, and we go and find them. And, you know, everybody's been rescued now. I mean, every community can get in or out of their space now. But as you'd find some of these communities, there was no looting and lots of houses have been destroyed. And people got together and created systems to share their food and to sort of voluntarily ration in a whole bunch of these communities. The magnitude of the flood is really hard to understand. I've been up and down on National Guard or Army Corps of Engineer helicopters every couple days just to see what is happening as the floodwaters have started to recede. And Governor Ricketts, who you mentioned a little bit ago, mm-hmm. He and I had the vice president in town last, I guess it was Thursday, and Pence was up with us. And Pence grew up in a town of 40,000 where everybody was washed away once in a flood. The whole town was wiped out. And as governor of Indiana, they had massive flooding that he'd experienced. He said he'd never seen a flood anything like this.
Holy cow. I will tell you, there is something about my grandmother was from Nebraska. And there's something about these farming communities that we have lost in the rest of the country. And I think it's because when you're a farmer, you have to rely on your neighbor and God. Those two things don't come through for you, you're toast. And everybody knows it. I might be having a great year, but I got to take care of my neighbor whose crop was lost for some reason, because the situation is going to be reversed down the road. And so everybody really does take care of one another. And it's so great.
We have a picture hanging in our dining room that my wife put up a couple of years ago. My wife's an Air Force brat, so born in California, but mostly from Alabama. And so when she got to Nebraska after we married and I went home to be a college president there, we had this experience where this 58, 59-year-old farmer dropped dead of a heart attack. And it was, 3 weeks from harvest. And his wife looks outside a couple weeks later, and there are 15 $500,000 tractors harvesting all their crop and just producing all the grain for her. And my wife has a picture of all these tractors in formation in tandem in this lady's field on our dining room wall.
I've seen it myself as well, growing up in a farming community. I mean, it's remarkable. So, Ben, how can Americans help? How can we help?
So first of all, the United Way and the Red Cross are doing great stuff. And then Glenn, you've been talking about your organization. So there's so many different philanthropies that are working. So thank you for that.
How long before you think this is, what's the rebuild like?
It's going to be years. Omaha is on the central edge of the east side of our state, and most of the flooding was north central and northeast Nebraska. We also have some massive livestock losses in the western part of the state, because what precipitated this whole thing is we'd gotten about 40 inches of snow in 60 days in January, February, which is a lot of snow.
How much snow?
This was more than we have 40 inches in 60 days. Then we had this thing called a bomb cyclone, which I didn't know anything about before, but it's basically when you have a hurricane effect out of a blizzard. And so at the edge of that blizzard, it's calving season, and Nebraska is one of the biggest cattle states in the union. And so you got a bunch of cows. Mama cows tend to be good at their job by the second or third time they give birth, but the first time they often don't
really
know what they're doing. And so you need to help and make sure baby gets hooked back up with mama. And so in the middle of a blizzard, the baby calves are 50 to 120 pounds. They can get frostbite if you don't have a rancher who knows how to help take care of them. So in the blizzard, we have north of $500 million of livestock loss already just from cattle.
Oh, my gosh.
In the eastern part of the state, where we now have flooding in Omaha and south down the Missouri River, so the Missouri divides Nebraska and Iowa, and then Nebraska and Missouri a little farther south, we're dumping sewage from 600,000 people straight into the river in Omaha because all the water treatment facilities are underwater.
Oh
we have stuff like that that's even before you get to the question of how do you rebuild levees temporarily for just thunderstorm protection this summer. And then the longer term question is, how are farmers and ranchers going to get to market this fall, because we have bridges washed out everywhere in the state.
Oh my gosh.
So it's a multi-year recovery I think we're looking at.
Holy cow. Ben, thank you so much. We know prayers matter, and so we are praying for the people of Nebraska, and you and the governor and everybody else involved in the rescue and rebuilding process, which will probably sounds like everybody in Nebraska. We urge you to give wherever you want to give. Mercury One, when you give to Mercury One, 100% of the proceeds go to what it's earmarked for. So if you earmark it for the flood in Nebraska, 100% will go. We urge you just to go to our relief efforts on the site and just donate there at Relief Efforts. Humanitarian relief, and the money will go there to help them out. All my best to you and your family. God bless.
Appreciate you covering this.
You bet. Senator Ben Sass.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
All right, the producer of a very important movie, The Creepy Line. If you haven't seen it, go to The Creepy Line. Is it .com or .org, Peter? Is he there? Peter?
Yes, hey.
Is it .org or .com, The Creepy Line?
It's .com.
Okay, The Creepy Line .com. Everybody needs to see this. It's about the future. and how you're being manipulated by Google and Facebook and everything else. He is also, Peter Schweizer is also the author of Secret Empires, How the American Political Class Hides Corruption and Enriches Family and Friends. We wanted to have him on. It's out in paperback, so you can grab this. But we wanted to get him on to talk specifically about Joe Biden. Now, this is a book that you wrote, what, 3 years ago or so?
It came out a year ago.
A year ago, okay.
Yes, a year ago. And I did your show then, and we talked about various people. But, of course, Biden has now resurfaced as sort of the major candidate.
Okay, so you go into Joe Biden, and I find this hard to believe because you've not heard anything about this in the mainstream media. He's one of, you make the case, one of the most, if not the most corrupt vice presidential or vice president we have ever had.
And yeah, that's exactly right.
Spiro Agnew comes to mind. We've had some pretty bad ones.
Yeah, we have. There's no question about it. And the reason Joe Biden has been able to sort of maintain this image is that he does something that I call offshore his corruption. And what offshoring the corruption basically means is, you know, he does not take payments from foreign governments and foreign entities. His wife does not, but his adult son does. And what that means is he doesn't have to disclose the business relationships, which are highly questionable, that his son has with all these foreign entities. And it's really highlighted by the fact that these business dealings are exactly in the foreign governments where Vice President Joe Biden was the point person for Obama policy. And in fact, in one instance, we know his son actually flew with his father on Air Force Two to close the deal with a foreign government. So Joe Biden can't plead ignorance to this by any stretch of the imagination.
So what kind of deals are we talking about? And go ahead.
Yeah, we're talking about mind-boggling deals. So in December of 2013, Joe Biden is flying on Air Force Two for a trip to Asia. He goes to Tokyo. He goes to Seoul, South Korea. But the main part of the trip is to Beijing, China. On the plane with him is his son, Hunter Biden. They spend 3 days in China. Biden is frankly criticized by the Washington Post and other entities for going soft on Beijing. He basically doesn't challenge them much on the South China Sea, on human rights, on trade policy. The most important thing that happens 10 days after they come back, and that's when Hunter Biden's very small financial firm inks a $1 billion, that's with a B, $1 billion private equity deal with the government of China. This is not a Chinese corporation. This is not an American company. This is the Chinese government. It's later expanded to $1.5 billion. And here's the important part, Glenn. Hunter Biden really has no background in private equity, and he has no background in China. And this deal through the Shanghai Free Trade Zone is unlike any deal that any other investment firm has in China. J.P. Morgan doesn't have this deal, Goldman Sachs. So it stinks to high heaven. And it's the first of a series of deals that Hunter Biden's small financial firm does with the Chinese government. It involves real estate deals. It involves the Chinese military. It's extremely troubling and really daunting to get your hands around the size and the scope of these deals that he cuts.
Okay. All right. Hang on just a second. So, I mean, I just want to play devil's advocate.
Sure.
What is his son's, I mean, there's nothing special about his firm. I mean, Goldman Sachs doesn't have it. That's pretty damning that J.P. Morgan doesn't have it, but he does. He's got to have some expertise that you've missed.
I understand exactly why you're raising that question, Glenn, because this is so shocking. But the fact is, Joe Biden, when he becomes vice president, up until that point, his son Hunter is a lobbyist in Washington, D.C. for online gambling entities. The point being, this private equity deal with the Chinese government, and again, this is the Chinese government giving Hunter Biden and this firm the opportunity to invest what becomes $1.5 billion in Chinese government money. And he has no background in this area. And it's very clear that he doesn't have background in this area. But he's glad to take the deal. And again, if you look at White House logs, we know that there are meetings that take place with a couple of the other guys that are his business partners. There's a guy named Devin Archer, who's a longtime friend of Hunter Biden's. Devin Archer, who went on trial last year for a bond scheme that basically ripped $60 million off of the poorest Indian tribe in America. There is no conceivable path or way that you can justify the Chinese government giving this deal to Joe Biden's son, other than the fact is he is Joe Biden's son, and Joe Biden was the point person, Barack Obama said explicitly, the point person on U.S. policy towards China during the Obama administration.
Okay, so there's one. I mean, everybody makes a mistake once. Is there any more?
There are. And here's the thing. We've sort of scratched the surface on this. We know that there was also a dirty deal done in the Ukraine. So Ukraine, of course, facing aggression from Russia. In 2014, now this is April of 2014, so this is only 4 months after that Chinese deal is inked. Hunter Biden joins the board of directors and is an advisor to a Ukrainian energy company called Burisma, and it's headed by two very corrupt oligarchs. I mean, these oligarchs, if you read about them, Kolomoisky and Zlochevsky, they're like out of they're villains out of a Bond novel, a James Bond novel. I mean, they're that troublesome. Hunter Biden joins the board of these Ukrainian companies at exactly the same time that his father is responsible for all Western aid flowing to the Ukrainian government. And that includes $1.8 billion that we pump in to the Ukraine through an entity called Privat Bank. Now, we give them $1.8 billion. A billion of that disappears. Disappears overnight. This is not in dispute. It's been widely reported. Here's the troubling part. Who owns Privat Bank? The same oligarch who has Hunter Biden on the payroll, who controls Burisma Energy. And let me add again, Hunter Biden has no background in Ukraine. He has no background in the energy field. He gets this position because his father, again, is the Obama administration's point person on policy towards Ukraine at this very, very crucial time. And they figure out the way to get favorable treatment from Joe Biden is to set up the son with a very lucrative arrangement.
I think I know the answer to this. Why is no one covering this?
It's remarkable. My view has always been in light of the Mueller report, in light of the Clintons and Uranium One, that we ought to be looking at all questions of foreign influence on American politicians.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter. You agree with me. I don't care if it's Republican or Democrat or independent. Relationships, especially anything to do with China and the Russian bloc.
Exactly. There's exactly right. And, I very early on when the Mueller investigation was launched, I said, look, this ought to be looked at. Let's just find out what's there. And of course, in my mind, it became pretty clear, 5 or 6 months in that there was not a whole lot to that narrative. But my view has always been it all ought to be looked at. And in the case of Joe Biden, unlike the allegations of Russian collusion with Trump, you have exchange of money, large sums of money. You have favorable policy decisions that Joe Biden is taking as vice president, and you have rival powers. I mean, China is a rival, and I would argue probably a bigger threat to America's future than Russia will be. Russia is a declining power.
Yes.
And yet there's no interest, very little interest, in looking into precisely these types of arrangements. And by the way, Glenn, these are the only cases that we know of, Ukraine and China. We actually got access when Hunter Biden's business partner, Devin Archer, went on trial in New York last summer. We got from the prosecutors financial records that involved accounts that served as pass-throughs, and Hunter Biden was getting money out of these accounts. Flowing into that account is not only $3 million from Ukrainians and you know, $1 million from the Chinese. There's also, you know, these transactions that we don't know where they're coming from. There's $1.2 million from some anonymous LLC run through a Swiss bank, a very small Swiss bank, which has been implicated in money laundering in 10 separate countries. Now, where's that money coming from? There's money from a Kazakh oligarch. This is all money that's going into account where Hunter Biden is skimming off funds. And it's all occurring in 2014 to 2016 while his father is vice president of the United States and steering American foreign policy.
All right, Peter, will you do me a favor? Could you write this up in the clearest and most dead to rights facts, so there's no speculation, and condense what you have in the book just to like a page or so. And I'm going to ask everyone in the audience to get the book Secret Empires. It's out right now. Get the book Secret Empires. But then if you can write this for me, I'd like to send this out to the audience and have them send it to everyone they know and make sure that it gets into the hands. Everybody should flood the Democrats who are running against Joe Biden, because the only way this will be investigated or talked about is right now when they're trying to bump each other off.
Here's what I'm going to suggest, Glenn. I'm going to give you the rights to copy the afterword of the book, which is, you know, 6 or 7 pages long. And it's just bullet points of what we know about the flow of funds, who they go to and where they go to.
Perfect.
And you can send that out to your listeners. And this is not in dispute. You know, Biden's response to me only came when the Wall Street Journal did an initial report on this, and all he did was attack me personally. He didn't refute anything. And the problem that he has is the financial records, the Chinese corporate documents, they are all clear cut. This is not subject to dispute. The only defense that he has is to try to argue that his son got all these deals based on
merit.
His merit, and that's just simply not true.
Do you have those documents from China and everything else?
Absolutely, we do.
Send
those
to me as well. I'd like every bit of hard evidence, and send it to me. And then we'll talk again. Peter, thank you so much. Hang on the phone. I just want to make sure you're sending it to the right place. Peter Schweitzer, he has a new book, and we'll have to talk to him.
It's out in paperback today.
Again, out in paperback. It's called Secret Empires. What we're talking about is the corruption of Joe Biden. These guys, the Clintons, really pioneered this, but they have made this, being president, they've made it into a business. And Joe Biden is very, very corrupt. And the only time they will look into it is right now.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.